भगवते वासुदेवाय
नमो भगवते
वासुदेवाय Chapter 8, entitled Prayers by Queen Kunti, text number 51. Srinam Madhata Bandhunam,
Srinam Madhata Bandhunam,
Droho Yovasa Vihothitaha,
Droho Yovasa Vihothitaha,
Karma Bidviha Medhiyaya,
Karma Bidviha Medhiyaya,
Naam Kalpo Vyakohitum,
Naam Kalpo Vyakohitum.
Srinam,
Srinam,
of the women,
of the women,
Mat,
by me,
Atha Bandhunam, of the friends who are killed,
Droha,
enmity,
Yaha,
that,
Asau,
all those, Iha,
herewith,
Utsitaha,
has accrued,
Karma Bhi,
by dint of work,
Griha Medhiyai,
by persons engaged in material welfare.
Now,
never.
Aham,
I,
Kalpaha,
can expect,
Vyapohitum,
undoing the same.
Translation by Swamigresh Prabhupada. I have killed many friends of women, and I have thus caused enmity to such an extent that it is not possible to undo it by material welfare work. Purport. The Grihamedis are those whose only business is to perform welfare work for the sake of material prosperity. Such material prosperity is sometimes hampered by sinful activities. For the materialist is sure to commit sins, even unintentionally, in the course of discharging material duties. To get relief from such sinful reactions, the Vedas prescribe several kinds of sacrifices. It is said in the Vedas that by performing the Ashvamedha Yajna, horse sacrifice, one can get relief from even Brahma Hatya, or killing of a Brahmana. Yudhishthira Maharaj performed his Ashvamedha Yajna, but he thinks that even by performing such yajnas, it is not possible to get relief from the great sins committed. In war, either the husband or the brother, or even the father or sons go to fight. And when they are killed, a fresh enmity is created. And thus, a chain of actions and reactions increases, which is not possible to be counteracted even by thousands of Ashvamedha yajnas. The way of work karma is like that. It creates one action and another reaction simultaneously, and thus increases the chain of material activities, binding the performer in material knowledge, in bondage, sorry. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:27-28, the remedy is suggested that such actions and reactions of the path of work can be checked only when work is done on behalf of the Supreme Lord. The battle of Kurukshetra was actually fought by the will of the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna, as it is evident from his version. And only by his will was Yudhishthira placed on the throne of Hastinapur. Therefore, factually, no sin whatsoever touched the Pandavas, who were only the order carriers of the Lord. For others, who declare war out of personal interest, the whole responsibility lies on them. Heavy. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Nimitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Mukham Karoti Vachalam Bangam Nangayate Girim Yat Kripaha Tamaham Vande Shri Guru Dinadharinam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama So we have almost completed this chapter. This is the second last verse, to chapter number 8 of the first canto, which is entitled Praise by Queen Kunti. So day after we start the next one, the passing away of Bhishma Dev in the presence of Lord Krishna. So in this chapter we have heard the eloquent prayers of Queen Kunti, saturated, full of devotion. And these prayers were actually, the whole idea behind these prayers was that Queen Kunti was trying to persuade the Lord to stay back, so he doesn't proceed to Dwarka. And before that also we saw how Krishna was about to leave for Dwarka, but Uttara came running to him and said that Ashwatthama has hurled a Brahmastra weapon targeted in the womb towards her embryo, Parikshit. So then Krishna stopped and protected her, and after that Queen Kunti offered her prayers, and the whole idea was to persuade Krishna to stay back because she could not bear separation from the Lord. But still Krishna decided to proceed to Dwarka because that was his will. And then he went inside the palace and told all the ladies that he went to take permission so he can leave. But then Maharaj Yudhishthira, he very lovingly implored Krishna, and because of his loving sentiments, Krishna obliged and he decided to stay for a few more days. So here, now that Krishna has stopped, Maharaj Yudhishthira was actually lamenting. He was lamenting because they had performed the funeral ceremonies, last rites for those who had quit their bodies on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. So he was actually lamenting that because of him, because of his being enthroned, so many men lost their lives, men and animals and other living entities, they lost their lives. So in the previous verses it's described in the Bhagavad that 640 million men lost their lives in 18 days. So 1 billion is equal to 1,000 million. So that's 1,000 million? Yeah? Okay, so that's 1.2 billion men died. So like the population of India, the entire country was wiped out, you can imagine. So that many people, 1.2 billion people, were wiped off the face of the planet in 18 days. So naturally, Yudhishthira, Maharaj Yudhishthira, because he was a very saintly person, a very pious king, he was lamenting. So he was lamenting that so many people lost their life just because he could be enthroned. And he felt that Duryodhan was executing the activities of administration very nicely. There was actually no need to put him on the throne. And we also see that in the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjun felt the same. The difference is, Arjun felt that before the start of the war, and here Yudhishthira is feeling after the war has ended. So Arjun was convinced by Krishna to fight. So his grounds are quite similar to Yudhishthira's lamentation. So that whole section is there in the first chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Why the first and the beginning of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita? Why Arjuna did not want to fight? And here, Maharaj Yudhishthira, he's lamenting the loss of so many men, because here it's mentioned that Srinam Madhata Bandhunam. He's actually concerned about the Sris, Srinam, about the women. And in the previous verses we heard, Maharaj Yudhishthira was lamenting the loss of boys, brahmanas, well-wishers. Because these are the classes of living entities who actually require protection. So in the Vedas it's described the cows, the women, the old men, the children and the brahmanas actually require special protection by the king, who is the representative of the Lord. So he's lamenting now, what's going to happen to them? They are actually friendless. So, of course, in today's warfare, when a war is waged, generally, they how they calculate the cost of the war is in terms of how much money is spent on the war. So like World War II cost $1 trillion globally. So that's how they calculated the cost of the war. And another way they calculate the cost of the war is by the productivity loss. In other words, the economy is not functioning at its normal rate and there is loss in production. So people cannot work, people cannot go to work, and of the production happens in production of weapons of destruction. But generally we see after a war, a country is crippled economically. And another way they calculate the cost of war is by the number of lives lost, the number of casualties, the number of soldiers died, and the number of civilians wounded or dead. So it's the World War II, the maximum number of living entities lost their life, which is 60 to 72 million people. But that's nothing as compared to the Battle of Kurukshetra, where 640 million men lost their lives. So out of these 60 million people in the World War II, 40 million are civilians who lost their lives, and 20 million are soldiers. So we can see how much the nature of warfare has changed in Kali Yuga. That, as Gopalakrishna was mentioning, that the German pilots, in order to retreat, go back to their country, they had to drop the bombs. So they dropped it on London. And in that way, so much destruction was caused. So that's how ordinarily losses are counted. So here, in the previous verse, we read that how Maharaj Yudhishthira, he was lamenting for the boys, for the Brahmanas, well-wishers, friends, parents, preceptors and brothers. So we have seen fathers like Bhurishrava, they were killed in the battle. Grandfathers like Bhishma and Somadatta, you know, they died. The Brahmanas or teachers like Dronacharya and Kripacharya, they were killed. Maternal uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, they were killed. Brothers like Duryodhan and all the other 99 brothers, the entire clan. So Maharaj Yudhishthira considered them to be brothers because they were actually part of the same family, the Kuru family. So all of them were killed. Sons like Lakshman, friends like Ashwatthama, and well-wishers like Kritavarma. So Maharaj Yudhishthira was actually lamenting this loss, and we can try to put ourselves in his shoes. I mean, if 640 million men have been lost so that you can be put on the throne naturally, if you have any godly qualities, you will lament. So when Arjun, in the beginning of Bhagavad Gita, he was also lamenting, and Srila Prabhupada mentions in one of his purports that that's actually a sign of a very virtuous devotee, because a devotee will feel like that. And also we have read that Yudhishthira should not have lamented, because the war was fought by the will of the Lord. It was the plan of the Lord. And so he shouldn't have been bewildered. But he was bewildered because, again, it was the plan of the Lord to make him bewildered. Just like Arjuna was bewildered by the will of the Lord, so Bhagavad Gita could be spoken, Maharaj Parikshit was bewildered. And there are many instances in the Bhagavatam where great personalities have been bewildered. So Yudhishthira was bewildered, so I mean, it's mentioned that here in the previous verse. Krishnena Bhuta Karmana. That Krishna, he is the one who performs superhuman activities. So Krishna performed the superhuman activity that Maharaj Yudhishthira could not be convinced by anyone. So great sages like Vyasadeva, they tried to convince Maharaj Yudhishthira that, you know, the war was fought for right purposes, in order to uphold justice, to put you on the king, because you are meant to be enthroned on the king. So because you are a pious person and the world needs a godly king. Although the administration was going well under Duryodhan, but Duryodhan, the duty of a king is to offer protection. Or the duty of a leader or a king, the foremost duty is to offer protection in order to create a safe environment so people can have a strong identity so they can practice Krishna consciousness. That's the main duty of a king or a leader. So Duryodhan, he was actually envious of Krishna. So because he was envious of Krishna, there's no hope for the people. Although his administration was good, as Gangesh Prabhu was mentioning. In Australia, actually, the administration is good. If you see the way, you know, they're quite professional in the way they conduct their government, and it's very well organized as compared to many other countries. They have good administration, but the leadership is not Krishna conscious, and therefore they cannot truly look after the citizens. So, as mentioned in the fourth chapter of the Gita, that the duty of a king is to give protection to the citizens from the bondage to lust. So because Duryodhan was unable to do that, that's why Maharaj Yudhishthira was placed on the throne. Because he had that vision and he could do it. So that's one reason why Yudhishthira Maharaj was put on the throne. And Maharaj Yudhishthira couldn't be convinced because Krishna is the super soul. He performed the superhuman act of covering Yudhishthira Maharaj. And also Krishna wanted to glorify his dear devotee Bhishma Dev, who was just about to pass away. So his time for passing away was coming soon. As we know, Bhishma Dev, he actually got a boon from his father. What was his father's name? Shantanu, right? Yeah. So because Bhishma Dev, he had taken a vow that he would never marry, so that his father's son could become the king. So because he had taken that vow that he would never marry, he was given the name Bhishma. And also his father gave him a boon that you will have control over your death, meaning that you can choose the time you want to die. Of course, he'll still have to die, he's not immortal. But he'll have full control over his death. So we saw Arjuna in the battle of Kurukshetra. He actually pierced Bhishma's body with arrows. And he was lying on a bed of arrows. But still he did not die, though he was in severe pain. So but now, as we know, that the mystic yogis, they can pass away at the opportune moment and attain the spiritual realm or even the material planets, depending upon what their destination is. So the right time was coming, and Bhishma Dev thought that now this is the time I should depart from this world. And Bhishma Dev was also meditating upon Krishna because he had a very intimate relationship with the Lord. His rasa was that of chivalry. So Krishna wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev because he is his devotee, and he wanted all the Pandavas and all the great sages of the universe to go there and to see that how Bhishma Dev, though even seemingly a worldly person, was very advanced in knowledge. So he wanted Yudhishthira to be convinced by Bhishma Dev, and in that way he wanted to glorify Bhishma Dev. And also Bhishma Dev was not happy to see the Pandavas suffer his whole life. So he wanted to make him happy at the time of his quitting this world. Because Bhishma knew that the acts of Duryodhan and Dhritarashtra were not right. So he was always in favor of the Pandavas. But he had to take the side of the Kauravas because out of obligation. Because Duryodhan had actually he was funding him. In other words, he was looking after his maintenance. So out of obligation, he had to fight on the other side. And of course, that's also because the Lord wanted to fight with him, and he wanted to satisfy the Lord by chivalry. So there's a whole another reason there. That was just the rasa. So in this way, Krishna wanted to actually glorify his devotee Bhishma Dev, and he wanted everyone to go there and to be and to get instructions from Bhishmadeva. So the next chapter we are going to hear in the Srimad Bhagavatam is the passing away of Bhishmadeva, where he gives instruction to Maharaj Yudhishthira. So here it's interesting, in the purport, Srila Prabhupada mentions the Grihamanis are those whose only business is to perform welfare work for the sake of material prosperity. This is also mentioned, Karma Vir Grihamedhiya. So, in the scripture there are two nomenclatures, there's the Grihastha and the Grihamedhis. So, Griha means house, and Medhi means actually one who is envious or jealous. So, we have the Varnashram, there's the four ashrams and the four varnas, there's the Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha and Sannyasi. So the Grihastha is one where Krishna is actually in the center. The purpose of life is to become Krishna conscious, and one does that by, one style is to live in the Grihastha ashram. One lives with a wife and children, or husband and children, and to cultivate Krishna consciousness in that style, because one is situated comfortably in that ashram. But Grihamedhi life is one in which the center is the family, it's not Krishna. So that's Grihamedhi life. And in the second canto, the first chapter, Grihamedhi life is described very nicely by Shukdev Goswami. He said, Shrutta Vyalini Rajendra Ninam Santi Sahasrasha Apashyatam Atma Tattvam Griheshu Grihamedhinam. So it's mentioned that those persons who are materially engrossed, being blind to the knowledge of the ultimate truth, have many subject matters for hearing in human society. So it's interesting, it's mentioned Griha Medhi. Medhi means one who is envious. So if one is situated in Griha Medhi life, one will naturally be envious. Because Griha Medhi life is all about, in Griha Medhi life there is lack of spiritual knowledge. So the vast majority of people in the world, they are actually Griha Medhis. So their entire consciousness is just absorbed in their sex life. Is just absorbed in their own living. So they are just, you can see how people are absorbed in their family. The family is the number one priority in their life. The kids, the wife, the home, you know, to either pay off the mortgage and to buy new houses. Then there's always this comparison, because there's this identification with the body. So there will always be someone who is better than us, and there will always be someone who's worse off than us. So of course one is not envious of someone who is less than us. But we are generally envious of someone who is equal or someone who is better. If it's someone who is far better, maybe we are not envious. But if someone who is a little bit better than us, then we are envious. So envy is basically indirect appreciation of someone. So we can see that and this envy is within everyone. It's something which has to be uprooted from the heart. So the way to purify envy is to offer direct glorification. If we are envious of someone, then that is indirect appreciation. So the way we channel it is, okay, you directly appreciate that person or the qualities that person has. If they can give a nice talk, you glorify, you appreciate that. The way they can dress or kirtan or whatever, cook. So we actually show our appreciation, and in that way we can try to overcome this envy. So Grihamedhis are naturally, because they're in the bodily concept of life, naturally they are envious of others. So you can see that is very prominent in society. And in India, where we see the family unit is still intact to a large degree, and it's breaking down now. But you see, in families there's a lot of envy. You know, they have so much gold, so we don't have that much, so we should also get more. Or they have such kind of a car, so you know, like that. Or their son or daughter is studying in Harvard, so I want to send mine to Oxford. So that is all based on envy. And And then also it mentions in the next verse, Nidraya Hriyate Naktam Vayena Cha Vayaha Deva Char Thehaya Rajan Kutumba Bharanena Vaya. And the lifetime of such an envious householder, so in the daytime there is busy working to accumulate money. And at night time they engage either in sleeping or having sex. And in this way they are fully absorbed in material life. And therefore it's called Griha Andhakupam, the dark well of householder life, in which one is so absorbed in material circumstances that they have no time to hear anything about spiritual life. So very, how many people are sitting here right now? Malcolm, there are 4 million people. Is it maybe 50, 70 people sitting here? So because they don't have any time, because their consciousness is just absorbed in making money during the daytime, how to advance one's career, do different things, certification, this and that. And then in the evening, when they come back home, they're just absorbed in family affairs. And at night, they're either having sex or they're sleeping. And the next day, same thing goes on. So therefore, the duty of the sannyasis is actually to go door to door and to wake up the householders. That's why we see Shukdev Goswami. He would go to the door of a householder and just stay for some time so that they could... He would go on the pretext of begging. So they would go on the pretext of begging, and the householder would give something for his benefit, and in exchange he would give him some spiritual knowledge. So Prabhupada has done that by... Of course, these days we can't do that. Brahmacharis can't go to houses, just knock around the block and, you know, ask for some alms. You know, that won't work. And, you know, in exchange give some words of... share some words of wisdom. So they'll probably, you know, there's a dog sitting there, you know, dog on a leash. You know, beware of dogs. So in Kali Yuga you can't do that. So Prabhupada dovetailed that through book distribution. He said, okay, you go out and distribute the books. So people give a donation. It's the same principle. People give a donation, and in return we give them wisdom. We give them Shastric knowledge. And also it's mentioned in the 7th canto, Yan maithunadi griya medhi sukha mituchan Kanduya nena karayor eva dukha dukham Tripyanti neha kripana bahu dukha bhaja Kanduti vam manasijam vishaheta dhiraha. That sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands to relieve an itch. Griha medhi, so-called grihasthas, who have no spiritual knowledge, think that this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it is a source of distress. So the kripanas, the fools, who are just the opposite of brahmanas, are not satisfied by repeated sensuous enjoyment. So here it's mentioned that if one is a griha medhi, one is actually a miser, because they're not using the human form of life for what it is meant for. So the human form of life is a great opportunity to revive one's loving relationship with Krishna and to come out of that. So we can see how the entire world is driven by this itching sensation, the entire planet. It's there in all species, and it's very prominent even in the human species. So people's consciousness is absorbed in that. So actually, between a grihastha and a griha medhi, it's actually a very fine line. So griha medhi just doesn't mean one who is not a devotee, or one who is not, or the people in the material world. But it's actually a very fine line, because we also have to make sure that Krishna is in the center in our lives. Krishna stays the center. So the priorities, even in our spiritual life, should not be changed. So we should have enough time so we can read the Srimad Bhagavatam, hear the Srimad Bhagavatam, associate with devotees, come to the temple, worship the deities, and we have enough time to execute the 5 potent items of bhakti. So that way then Krishna is actually in the center. But if our life is just governed by a work, if we put our service behind our work, behind our family priorities and work, then it's actually a very fine line. So the balance can shift very quickly. And that's always the challenge in Grihastha life, that the priority always remains Krishna. So the Grihamedis, as is mentioned here, are those whose only business is to perform welfare work for the sake of material prosperity. So people in the world, they think that why can't we achieve peace through sense gratification? So they are actually trying to achieve peace through sense gratification. So everyone wants world peace. And so people think, why can't we all just have fun and, you know, at the same time be peace? But actually it doesn't work like that. And even in the course of, as is mentioned here, such material prosperity is sometimes hampered by sinful activities, for the materialist is sure to commit sins even unintentionally in the course of discharging material duties. So of course the Vedas, they recommend that if one wants to enjoy materially, then one follow the Vedic path. If one follows the Vedic path, then one can fulfill one's propensity to enjoy in the material world, but at the same time extricate oneself from the material world very gradually. But even in the course of executing such pious Vedic activities, one risks a very high chance of committing sinful activities, even unintentionally. And we see the example of Maharaj Nigar. So at one time, the Yadu boys, I think, can't remember, headed by who, they were playing and they went to a well. They were thirsty, so they wanted to drink some water. And what inside they saw was a huge lizard, like resembling a hill. So they felt pity for this lizard and they thought, okay, we'll try to take it out. And you know, so they tried with leather ropes and their thongs, and but they were unable to take it out. Then they approached Krishna. This is the situation, so can he do something about it? So then Krishna extended his, I think, left arm and he took the lizard out. And by Krishna's touching the lizard, it actually transformed into a demigod. And everyone was astonished that how did that happen? So then Krishna asked the lizard that how did this take place? How did you transform into this very lowly creature? And the lizard, the demigod, who was a lizard, replied that I was actually a king by the name of Nringa, and I was a very charitable person, and I would give in charity so many cows, like as many grains of sand are there on this planet, that many cows I would donate in charity, or as many drops fall from the sky, raindrops, that many cows I would give in charity. And so he said, one day I gave a lot of cows in charity to this Brahmana, and one of the cows from the herd escaped and came back to my herd, and then I donated those cows to another Brahmana. And so then the first Brahmana said that he actually recognizes that cow belonged to him, and he said, so how is it with you? He told the other Brahmana, how did it end up with you? And he said, actually the king gave me in charity, so it belongs to me. And thus there was an argument and there was a fight. So then they approached Maharaj Nigga, and he said, in return I'll give you, I think, 10,000 or 100,000 cows to both of you. So you just give me that cow back and I'll give you 10,000 or 100,000 cows in return. But the second Brahmana said, no, you know, I cannot give that back. You've given in charity to a Brahmana and you cannot take it back. And then they both were offended and they left. And then when he died, he went to Yamraj. And Yamraj said, so you want to enjoy first or you want to suffer? He said, you'll enjoy for a long, long time, because I cannot even count how much charity you have done. So he said, okay, I'll suffer first. Then, therefore, he ended up becoming a lizard. So in this way, we can see that even by performing the Vedic system of material enjoyment, it's very risky. So what to speak of today? In today's world, no one is acting according to the Vedic injunctions. In fact, no one even recognizes the Vedas. They reject them. What to speak of acting? So all the welfare work done today more or less produces a reaction. And we see even in the welfare work, it's questionable whether it is actually welfare work. For example, Salvation Army will serve meat as a welfare activity. So the intention is there, but it's not really a welfare work. They're doing harm to the animals and to the people who are feeding. They're generating karma. And in the name of welfare work, so much research is done to prevent cancer and so many other problems. But all these tests are done on poor animals. So in that way, welfare work these days is actually questionable. And it's also very sinful by nature. So the highest welfare work we can do is to become Krishna conscious and to embrace the preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And then not only will we destroy people's karma, but we'll also do the highest welfare work of connecting them to Krishna. Sometimes for people it's very difficult to understand Krishna conscious welfare work. But it requires, one has to be a little bit sober before one can understand. A common person cannot appreciate because they cannot understand the soul. They cannot understand the spiritual platform. So here also it's mentioned in the translation that Yudhishthira Maharaj mentions that he has caused enmity to such an extent that it is not possible to undo it by material welfare work. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is feeling that because he has killed 640 million men, therefore he has created a lot of enmity. Originally our enmity is with God. The very reason why we are in the material world is because of this enmity with God. And even Lord Brahma mentions that of the five types of ignorance which cover the living entity, when Brahma was creating material bodies and he was shedding them off. So one of them, the five kinds of ignorance, one of them is this anger against God. So in the spiritual world, it's called Tamasra. We have this anger against Krishna. And this anger against Krishna produces this envy which causes us to come in the material world. So originally we have this enmity with Krishna that we actually want to take Krishna's position. Why is Krishna enjoying like that? We want to be the center. And that's why we end up in the material world. And we can see great demons like Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, Shishupal, Kamsa, they were actually very angry with Krishna. Their consciousness was consumed by anger. But because they were still thinking of Krishna, though unfavorably, they got benefit. But the point is that there is this anger against God, which actually places us here. So, you know, most people will say, actually, I'm not angry with God. What are you talking about? I'm not angry with God. I've got nothing to do with it. I'm just minding my own business. He might be there, he's not there, we don't know. I don't have any anger. But actually, people are angry against God. If anything goes wrong, the first person to blame is God. Even in World War II and 9/11, when we see a lot of the women, they were actually going to the church and praying that their husbands be protected, their sons or brothers. But then, of course, most of them didn't come back alive. So then they became angry and they became atheists. And then they decried the existence of God. So also as Krishna mentions, the four kinds of people who are not favorable. Asuram bhavam ashritaha. Mayaya aprita gyan. So they are those people who are outright atheists. So they're naturally angry against God. Even the University of Melbourne where we have a club, there's actually another club by the name of the Atheist Club. So there are organizations who are dedicated their lives to decrying God. So obviously there is some anger, there is enmity. So they have these periodic journals and newsletters which come out and they have their very strong propaganda. So naturally there is that enmity with God. So when we come to the material world, that enmity extends to other living entities. Because in the material world, everyone is trying to play God. God means this: I'm the controller, enjoyer, and the proprietor. And therefore, everyone should recognize my existence and everyone should serve me. And even if I believe in God, God is simply an order supplier. And even if there is a religion, I am enrolled in that religious faith, then the purpose of that religious faith is to satisfy my material desires. That's what religion is meant for. Otherwise, what's the purpose of religion? So we see that most people who come to the temple come with that motivation, that God is actually my order supplier and he should fulfill my purposes. And if he doesn't, then he's my enemy. Of course, most people won't outrightly say that, but subconsciously that's what they're saying, that God is my, he's not fulfilling my desires, therefore I'm going to stop coming to the temple. And a lot of people became atheists after 9/11. After many of these wars take place, a lot of people become atheists, or when things don't go their way. And naturally that enmity is extended to other living entities, because naturally in this world, when we are trying to enjoy sense gratification, there will always be someone who will come in the way. That's the way the material world is created. There is disparity. There are people who are higher than you, there are people who are lower than you. Stronger than you, weaker than you. So there will always be someone who will come in our way of sense gratification. You know, maybe even if it's someone at work, or even someone in the devotional community, it could be, there, you know, why is this person, or if someone instructs us otherwise, if we want to do devotional service our way, and someone instructs otherwise, then that Prabhu or Mataji becomes an enemy. So in this way we can see this enmity is in relationship to the bodily concept of life, to satisfying the desires of the body. So here Maharaj Yudhishthira is mentioning that because I've killed so many men, naturally the enmity has been created. So Maharaj, like, of course, in the wars back then, only the Kshatriyas would fight. Not everyone, unlike the warfare today, where it's even the citizens suffer. So only the Kshatriyas would fight, and these women were bereft of husbands, sons, fathers. So naturally, enmity has been created. So you see, even in the conflicts in the world which are raging today, they're raging because of enmity, more or less. If you see the Israel and Palestinian conflict, it's all enmity. It's because so many years ago there was some conflict, and because so many people have been killed, and this enmity passes from generation to generation. Even Indians and Pakistanis still date. They are very, there's a strong enmity. Especially those who are living there. Here it might not be that strong. But still, you know, subtly it's there. Especially if one of your family members has been killed by someone else. Then naturally that enmity is there. And then that enmity passes for generations in the family. And then that increases to the society. Then nationally, then becomes international, and then there is so much strife, conflict and war. So we can see how this enmity is based because of the bodily conception of life. So here we see how Maharaj Yudhishthira, he was actually thinking about the welfare of the women. That's why it's mentioned Srinam Madhata Bandhunam. So Maharaj Yudhishthira is thinking about the welfare of the women class, because they are faultless and they require protection. So he was not like a king or leader of today, where, as I mentioned before, when there's a war, they calculate the cost in terms of loss of production, how much money spent, and how many men died. But they don't think about the women, they don't think about the children, and all the other losses suffered. They're very often No, they very rarely think about the individual human losses, individual human suffering. So they're just concerned about these three factors. But here we see Maharaj Yudhishthir, he was concerned about the women because they became friendless, as is mentioned here. I've killed many friends of the women because they lost their husbands, sons, brothers, and fathers. And so he was thinking, who is going to protect them now? Because as we know, it's mentioned in the Vedas that women require protection in all stages of their life. So in their youth, they're protected by their father in their childhood. And then when they get when they're married, they're protected by the husband. And later, they're protected by the sons. So in all stages, they're protected. And Maharaj Yudhishthir was thinking, now that everyone is dead, how are they going to be protected? That was actually his anxiety. He didn't have post-traumatic stress disorder, which most soldiers get after a war. He didn't have that kind of anxiety. His anxiety was, how are they going to be protected? And the anxiety of a king and a father is that the daughter is married, gets married to a responsible man. So therefore it's called Kanyadan. The father don't Kanyadan or Kanyadai, which means it's not a debt, but it's actually a great burden on the father, at least till a few years ago, that this anxiety. In India, it still might be there, but it's going away. In the West, it's not there at all. They don't care who their daughter is married to or who is she going out with. But in Vedic civilization, in a civilized place, the father would actually be worried about that. That would be his main anxiety, to get the daughter married to a man who will actually protect her, not who will just be with her today and tomorrow leave her. So someone who will actually protect her. And in the Vedic system, the women would be married between the ages of 9 and 12. This is inconceivable today. Even in India, it's inconceivable that a girl is getting married between the ages of 9 and 12. The reason behind that was, of course, the Westerners would think that's the most backward thing ever you could do. That's why India hasn't progressed so much. But the whole idea behind that was, before they attain puberty, they already have a husband, so their mind is peaceful. And once they have attained puberty, then they can get married. So they don't have this insecurity, who's going to be my husband. And they don't look here and there, and adultery is not encouraged in society. So even Arjuna, he had this concern. That's why he didn't want to fight. So in summary, Maharaj Yudhishthir was bewildered because the Lord desired it. It was the will of the Lord. So he could be instructed by Bhishma Dev. And how Griyamaris are those in whose delight Krishna is not the center. And enmity is caused because of the bodily conception of life. And the duty of a responsible father or king is to give protection to the dependents. So any questions or comments? Also, Krishna mentioned in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the mentality of a demoniac person. Such and such is my enemy and I have killed him. And there are many others and they will be killed in due course of time. So anyone who comes in a way becomes an enemy. So how to overcome that? A few approaches we can take. Like a disease is cured by a few approaches. So philosophically we should understand that actually everyone is a part and parcel of Krishna. So, and they're living entities who are in actually a diseased state of being. But they actually, we are actually parts and parcels. We are brothers. We have a way, but we all are servants of Krishna. And the other way we can overcome it is by, if we have enmity against a certain person, we can glorify that person and try to serve that person. It's interesting, Srila Prabhupada mentions that a saintly person, he does not have any enemies, but other people see him as an enemy sometimes. Even a saintly person, others see him as an enemy, though he is the well-wisher of everyone. So that's just the nature of this world. There will always be someone who will be against us. And if we'll see that when the Krishna Consciousness movement becomes very prominent in society, if it comes in the mainstream, we're going to have a lot of enemies. Because we are telling people, stop eating meat. So, you know, there's an entire industry around that. Stop gambling. Yesterday Gopananda Shri was mentioning that the gambling industry in Australia brings in $15.8 billion. So when you are a threat to that, when you are making people devotees, people in that industry, there's going to be, you know, serious enmity. Illicit sex and intoxication. So as Krishna consciousness becomes more and more prominent, there will be enmity. And even on a personal level, sometimes even other devotees won't talk to you, or they'll be very much against you because they don't appreciate what you're doing for them. So how to overcome it? By serving them, by glorifying them, by praying for them, and by philosophically understanding that there will be a friend and a foe. That's just the nature of this world. And one should try to tolerate it and not be disturbed by them. Just proceed in one's Krishna consciousness. Anyone like to add on that? Prabhuji? Prabhuji? Like to add on that? Yes.
It's written by Prahlad Maharaj in the 7th canto. It's also mentioned in the 5th canto when the residents of Jambudvipa offering praise. And Prahlad Maharaj explained that by practicing devotional service, one becomes sober and calm. And because of that, one will start thinking about the welfare of all living entities. And in that way, there can't actually be any envy or enmity. So simply by practicing devotional service, the demonic tendencies will disappear because we develop certain traits and character.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
On the same point, I was listening to a lecture by Govind Prabhu, who's a senior brahmachari in Chapati Temple, and he was saying that any situation which a devotee sees, he converts it into an opportunity given by the Lord to serve him, like in terms of this enmity or so forth. Like you were mentioning that saintly people, there are many people who would be his enemies, although he will not have enemies. So he was telling a pastime of a saintly person, he didn't mention the name, and he said he was a great scholar also, but he was a devotee also. And there were many people who were envious of him. So once the envy got to such an extent that they thought that we must put a garland of chappals, of shoes around his neck. So they kept that garland on the top of his doorway, and every morning he would go out to take bath in the river, like in the Kaveri River or somewhere. So as soon as he opened his door, that full garland fell on him actually. And it went around his neck. And he was such a nice devotee. He said that yogis pray for mystic siddhis and jnanis pray to merge into the existence of the Brahman existence of the Lord. And but what a devotee prays for? He just prays for the dust of the lotus feet of devotees. And today by giving this garland of chappals, you have given me the dust on my head. So I'm so thankful to my Lord. He immediately composed the verse. And all his enemies immediately fell at his feet and they became his disciples. So he was saying that how saintly people convert such enmity which people are
feeling. That's a very nice point. So they see it as an option, as an opportunity for purification. Okay. Any other questions? Comments? Yes, Prabhu.
So in the third paragraph, Prabhupada mentioned that the action reaction to the law of karma, so they are created simultaneously, that thus increases the chain of mental activities. Now, how do we understand this in terms of the other karma of the man and the other? So the karma, the action of karma is there. So here Prabhupada mentioned that it produces variations simultaneously, whether or not one goes through this law of karma. So how do we understand the point?
I didn't
Here, Prabhupada mentioned that one for a karmic reaction is a reaction automatically. Samantha is
yeah.
created. So, how do we understand this point from in terms of the yoga system? For a materialistic person, yes, it applies. But even for a yogi who is part of karma yoga, so does this still apply to them?
If one is practicing karma yoga, jnana yoga properly, then your reactions will be destroyed because you're giving the results of your work to Krishna. So you don't accrue any more reactions. It's also mentioned third chapter Gita, actually your reactions begin to get destroyed. But if there is deviation in that, then you will get some reaction. Of course, the best is to practice bhakti. So, even through bhakti, the reactions are destroyed. And one can also get prema. The other ones won't give you prema. Maximum they can give is liberation. Thank you, Prantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Thank you.